Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Today is the opening day of the 2025 Utah Legislature. We're broadcasting live from the Siegel Room in the East Senate Building in the Utah Capitol Complex. We'll be talking about the issues likely to be addressed in the legislature this year, and our guests include legislative leaders, Senate President Stuart Adams, House Minority Leader Angela Romero, and House Minority Whip Jennifer Daley Provost. We'd love to hear from you as well. What do you want to see come out of this legislative session? What should be the top priorities? You can email us to upraccess@gmail.com, upraccess@gmail.com. And we'll begin this broadcast with Senate President Stuart Adams. Well, it's opening day of the 2025 Utah Legislature. We're doing our usual broadcast, and we'll, on this part of the program, be talking with Senate President Stuart Adams. President Adams, thank you so much.
Yeah, we're excited to begin another legislative session. There's a lot going on in Utah.
There sure is, yeah. Well, let me just start with open-ended. What are your top priorities this session?
Well, one of them has to be energy. Right now, we look around and we know that AI, the country that actually controls AI, is going to control the world, both with high-tech devices and high-tech manufacturing, and with high-tech weapon systems. We see that even that happening in some of the disruptions we're seeing in the world, in Ukraine and Israel. So it's really important that we lead on AI. And the problem is that AI needs data centers, and data center needs power. And we don't have any excess power in America, and we have almost none in Utah. So we've got to focus on power production.
So AI is a proliferating, of course. We're all using it. Is there benefit for Utah having AI centers, or should we just, pull AI in from other places?
Well, the challenge is again, we're not competing against other places in America. We're competing against other places in the world. And those countries are aware of the arms race. It's already begun, and they're hard at it. They're producing power. And in addition to that, critical minerals are a real challenge. There's one country in the world that actually controls 60% of the critical mineral extraction and 90% of the manufacturing. And they just cut America off a month ago from three of the critical minerals needed in electric vehicles and our defense industry and other products that we need. If we don't have critical minerals and we don't have power, it's going to affect our economy, and that's something that I believe is actually a national security issue.
Governor Cox is talking about nuclear energy. He feels like nuclear energy needs to be a part of Utah's energy package. What do you think?
We need to be the nuclear energy capital of the world. No question about it, both in mineral extraction and production, and in technology. Our universities are retooling. They're looking at different degrees, both nuclear engineers, nuclear technicians, and they're looking at trying to train a workforce to actually construct nuclear power plants. Nuclear are very safe. They're small nuclear reactors and micro reactors. And I agree with Governor Cox, and nuclear's got to be part of the solution.
So recently, as you know, the U.S. Supreme Court declined to hear Utah's public lands lawsuit. On the other hand, we have the inauguration yesterday of President Trump, who likely will have a different view than the Biden administration of public lands. How does that interconnect with energy? Are you optimistic?
Well, that's connected, but not totally. Our public lands are more a recreational feature for Utah, and it's very important that everyone understand that we're trying to actually let the state control non-appropriated public lands. We're not talking national parks or other lands used by the federal government. These are lands that aren't being used at all. We just think Utah ought to be able to control them. Everybody recreates on them. We hunt, we hike, we camp, we fish, we mountain bike, and they ought to be in Utah's control. And the Supreme Court failed to take it up, but we know that that was a high probability, and we knew we might have to go through the district courts, and so now we're into that process. But we're not going to give up trying to control the land in Utah. We feel like we can do it much better than somebody back east in Washington, D.C. can do. We can control our public lands and do a good job with it.
Well, we're on public lands. President Trump probably likely to shrink Bear's Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante like he did the previous administration. Do you support that?
Oh, absolutely. And in addition to that, you know, they actually excluded Alaska from any more national monuments like that. And the Antiquities Act is just being abused by president after president. It's a ping pong game. And somehow I think we need to have congressional action that just settles it. And it ought to be done by an act of Congress rather than presidential decree. And I it's disappointing to see it go back and forth. Again, you can tell that I believe we can manage our lands well. In fact, the federal government, better than the federal government, because the federal government shut down the government, if you remember, a few years ago, and they do it from time to time. They actually shut down our national parks. We had to fund the reopening of them and try to help our national parks reopening, because our recreation facilities are around those national parks are economically dependent upon them. And we'll maintain our public lands if we can have control of them.
You no doubt know that some in Utah are skeptical of state control over public lands, feeling like there'd be more resource extraction, wouldn't be as good stewards of the land as the federal. Of course, you know, I'm sure you have a different, I know you have a different point of view. What would you say to those people?
Well, you know, our school trust lands, right now we've got several billion dollars that we've actually put into a reserve account to fund our schools. And that case come just from the school trust land, not from the federal land, from the mineral extraction off of those. And it's helping to take care of our kids. And it's just not fair that 70% of Utah could be tax exempt and not have economic value to help fund the resources that we need. We have some of the largest families in the nation. They need to have a good education. And if we can use some of those lands to try to help fund our education system like we're doing with the school trust lands, I think it's a benefit for the state of Utah. We'll manage our fairs well. We do it on our school trust lands. There's not been a problem there. And I think we can do both. But our kids are more important, I think, than anything, and we need to make sure we have the revenue to be able to fund our education system in Utah.
I want to move to another priority. Governor Cox, he said in rolling out his budget, energy, of course, which we've talked about here, and housing is his other big pillar. What is likely to come forward on housing, do you think?
We're going to continue to try to help the housing market. Again, one of the biggest challenge with housing is there's just not enough supply and there's too much demand. And we've seen it go up and down before, but the solution to our housing market is not destroy our economy, because we need an economy to be able to fund our education system and other things. We just need more supply. And in any way we can get supply, that is something we need to focus on. And a lot of that happens on a municipal level at the cities or counties. And we're going to try to help them, partner with them. But we need to streamline the process and to be able to get more product out in front of people so that they'll have more options. And if we do, we think the prices will moderate or come down.
Related note to homelessness, what are there any bills you're aware of going to be run here? How do we make progress in homelessness?
Yeah, homelessness, we're going to attack it from every which way we can. You know, one of the things that's really important is for a long time we had drug courts in Utah. And you know, I believe that treatment's a lot better than incarceration, but sometimes you have to get people into treatment. And people who have substance abuse problems or are struggling with drugs, they need a motivation to be able to get into those treatment centers. So I think some of it will be criminal justice reform, trying to work through the process to be able to motivate those people to get the help they need. I believe it's just unconscionable and not humane to leave people in a drug addicted situation. We need to try to give them the motivation to get the treatment they need to help their lives.
I want to move to higher education. Speaker Schultz said that he'd like to see 10% cuts across the board, maybe more, maybe less, he said. What's the latest there? Is anything taking shape, higher education?
Well, I think we've talked, and I don't think they're cuts. It's just realignment. That we have an opportunity. We have very, very high-demand jobs. I talked about nuclear and energy being one of them. We need engineers. We need nurses. We actually need school teachers. And there are jobs and there are degrees that actually are very, very high demand. And there are some jobs and degrees we've had duplication. I think there was one language that was taught in multiple different universities, and there were only two or three students in the classroom, two or three, had a professor teaching them. That doesn't make sense. So what we need to do is realign into the high-demand jobs, which will drive our economy and be more responding, be a better response to the companies and businesses we have in Utah. And so rather than a cut, I think it'll be more of a realignment. And I think the universities, I see that. I think that most of them welcome it.
Would that mean some programs being shut down if they're not pointing to high-end jobs?
Yeah, I think it will. I think some might, and some may be expanded. And I actually believe that the future, because I talked about AI earlier, the future is in technology. And the universities that actually are able to develop and do research and research dollars and our future is basically based on research ought to actually be, instead of cut, they actually ought to be funded more. Higher ed is the future, and I think we have many, many, many people that depend on higher ed, our businesses look forward to those students that come out. But probably the number one issue that I see as I talk to businesses is that they just don't have people. They're looking for people to go to work, and our colleges and universities are a key to that.
Commissioner Landward, the story I'm reading just today is mentioning a figure of $60 million spread across the institutions. Is that something you think is going to happen?
$60 million, I think, could be realigned. I think as you look at the demand for engineering, as you look at the demand for nursing, as you look at the demand for nuclear technicians, nuclear engineers, as you look at the high demand jobs and degrees are what we're trying to do, and I think that's doable to be able to realign.
The Great Salt Lake, there's been a bit of a kerfuffle in the news about the 2023 report, which gave a kind of a 5-year timeline, possible timeline. Then we had two huge snow years. But what I'm reading now is we're back to 2021 levels. What should we do about the lake this session?
Well, we've got a water agent we actually hired this last year, and he's been busy working with other states. And you may have read and been aware that a San Diego water board member was asked about our idea of actually building desalination plants for California and then trading them for our Colorado River water. His comment in the meeting was, why not? We have the Pacific Ocean. We've been working with other legislators in Wyoming and Idaho, South and North Dakota, Montana, and even as far away as Alaska. And they want to join with us in trying to help solve our water problems and our energy problems. And it's a real opportunity for us to work with other states. And as we do it, I'm confident we'll be able to solve our water problems.
Where does agriculture fit in this, and I guess conservation from regular citizens?
Well, we know that 70% of our new water availability will come from conservation. It just has to, and we're aware of that. We're going to continue to try to conserve, and there's ways we can do that. So when you add in the effort we're making with other states and conservation, I believe we're going to be able to handle the challenges we have with water.
One very likely result of the inauguration of a new president, President Trump, is a change in immigration policy. He's talked about deportations on a mass scale and other measures. Where does Utah fit in?
We've done some work, and we actually have a lot of laws on the books right now trying to deal with people who are here and immigrants. We're going to see what President Trump does. There's no question about it. We cannot let those who are in our state, who are committing crimes, who are not citizens, stay here. And I think we need to find a way. ISIS, it's a challenge that I think we're going to all have to work and tackle. And I think we'll see what President Trump does.
In general, on the economy, where does our economy stand, and where would you like to see it grow?
Utah's economy is still growing, and we're very fortunate. We have we've been rated by U.S. News and World Report as the best economy in the nation. They announced that last April for the second year in a row. We've been 17 years in a row with the best economic outlook. We've cut taxes the last 4 years, and I think we'll actually even look at a tax cut this year. And to do tax cuts 5 years in a row is pretty phenomenal when you think about the fact that we've actually increased teachers' salaries. And we're in the top in the Western United States as far as teacher salaries right now. So that's what a strong economy does, is it allows you to take care of government services that we need and also cut taxes.
Governor Cox has proposed eliminating the tax, or I guess reducing or eliminating the tax on Social Security benefits. Of course, this would benefit seniors. Is that likely to happen, or would you like to see different tax cuts?
Well, that's surely one option, and we've been very supportive of actually removing the Social Security tax. We've actually cut the you don't pay Social Security if you make $75,000 or less. We did that the last 2 or 3 years. We've worked on trying to help and reduce or cut the Social Security tax in Utah. So I assume this year it'll have some support. And then the other thing that'll have support is we actually have young families who are struggling too. Families with the children, they're trying to get them through school, get them through their lessons. And income tax is always a challenge to them. And we'll probably look at income tax again. And we'll see as the session evolves what we can do. But I'm confident we'll probably do some type of tax cut.
Well, thanks for joining us for this special broadcast. And this part of the program, we've been talking with Senate President Stuart Adams. President Adams, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you for your time.
We're broadcasting live from the State Capitol Complex on Access Utah today, our annual tradition, and it's the opening day of the 2025 Utah Legislature. We're broadcasting from the Siegel Room in the East Senate Building, and you've heard from Senate President Stuart Adams there. Later in this broadcast, we'll be hearing from House Minority Leader Angela Romero and House Minority Whip Jennifer Daley Provost. Following a break, we'll be pleased to welcome in Representative Raymond Ward, Republican from Bountiful. That'll be coming up in a minute. Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're broadcasting from the State Capitol Complex. It's the opening day of the 2025 Utah Legislature. And later in this program, we'll be talking with House Minority Leader Angela Romero and House Minority Whip Jennifer Daley Provost. And we'll hear, if we have time, from a couple of representatives from advocacy groups. We heard earlier from Senate President Stuart Adams. Right now, we're pleased to welcome in Representative Raymond Ward, Republican from Bountiful. Representative Ward, thank you.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
So, Representative Ward, you're a physician, I understand.
Yeah, primary care physician.
So that's busy anyway. What made you decide to run for the legislature?
I've always had an interest in public policy and public projects. I think I first got involved a lot here in Utah related to the Medicaid expansion, and worked on that for several years before it got put in place. But I feel like I get to see it on a day-to-day basis in my clinic when someone comes in who I know would not otherwise have coverage but needs it because of that.
So tell me where we stand with that. We did expand Medicaid coverage.
Yes,
is that working well?
Yeah, I mean, it passed by ballot initiative, and then the legislature made some modifications to it after that. But fundamentally, we just expanded Medicaid. It just covers folks in poverty without having to have some other condition like disability or being justice involved or something like that. It's just if you're in poverty, we have Medicaid available. And it works about as good as other Medicaid does, which has all its problems, but it's way better than not having any coverage at all.
Yeah. I had forgotten that that passed by initiative first.
Yeah.
I think it's been modified by the legislature. I don't know if you have an opinion on the latest. Some legislators really, really kind of don't like the initiative process as stands. They want to kind of restrict it more. You know, we had Amendment D, for example.
Yes. So I think that the initiative process is spelled out in the Utah Constitution. And so I'm content that it belongs there, and it belongs as part of our process. It's in the Constitution. Every officeholder is taking an oath to uphold the Utah Constitution. So I hope there's nobody thinking, well, I just don't like it, so I won't have it. It is a much, I mean, the legislature does have much more ability to respond to problems and make changes. An initiative is a very blunt instrument, if you will. You only get one set of wording, and it takes a long time and a lot of effort to do it, and you can't really change it. I think that almost everything just should go through the legislature, but there are times, and the Medicaid expansion is an example of that, when the legislature just will not give satisfaction on an issue that a lot of people care about. And to me, it's an important backup. If it goes and goes and goes and goes, and a lot of people want it and know they want it and are willing to work for it, and the legislature won't do it, it's almost like a safety release valve. My medical cannabis program was the same way, right? The legislature said no for several years in a row. And only after that did citizens get organized enough, donate enough money, donate enough time, and put the effort in to get it on the ballot. And to me, it's a program also that the legislature did change it, but to me, it's working pretty well. I'm glad we have it, and we wouldn't have had it without that initiative.
I want to do one more question on medical coverage. You know, many nations separate out your job from your coverage. And this, by and large, it's your medical coverage, your health insurance is tied to your employment. You think that ought to be that way? Would you go all the way to Medicaid for all, or where do you think we ought to be in general?
Every system has its pros and cons. And I can certainly tell you a long list of both for our system here in America. You see things all the time that don't work well, but then you see other things that do work well. I don't think it's possible really to make all the changes that would have to switch over to have the government do it. I just don't even see that as a viable pathway forward in the United States. So that just means that for me, I would focus on other changes that I think could be made that would make our system better. I can give you one example. So we have a terrible time. The FDA, I think the FDA in approving medications does not do a good job. I think they regard their focus so much on safety that they do not care if people actually get their medicines. And if all you care about is that no one ever gets an unsafe medicine, it's really simple. Just don't approve anyone. No one can have any medicines, and no one would have an unsafe one, and you would have met your mandate. It just doesn't seem to bother them when they do things that make it so that medicines are not available. But rather than try and relitigate that one policy at a time, because that attitude comes from 1,000 different policies, what I think we ought to do is have reciprocity with the equivalent certifying agency over in the European Union. And we just ought to agree, they have a similar large bureaucracy, and they have a similar good safety track record. We just ought to agree that if a medicine's approved over there, it's approved over here, and they'll agree that if it's approved over here, it's approved over there. And there could still be a process to say, whoa, 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 no, not that one, and go through a process to take it out. But that would overall net, there would just be more approvals. And if a company went through the many million dollars of effort to get a medicine approved, they would know that they had a larger place that they could sell it. To me, that would just be a big step in the right direction.
I want to ask you, I'll give you a chance to do it open-ended and what your priorities are, but I wanted to talk about higher education. Speaker Schultz is talking about cuts to higher education. You've spent a lot of time in higher education. Obviously, you're a physician. Are you supportive? It seems like Commissioner Landward is saying that right now we're looking at maybe $60 million cut over all of the higher education institutions. Speaker Schultz, of course, wants more emphasis on programs that would lead you to a high-paying job. It would lead you to things that Utah needs, right? Or with higher graduation rates. Are you supportive of this, or where are you on this?
So I'm not involved in the details of the individual negotiations that are going on, so I don't know how to speak to the individual smaller level decisions that are being made. My understanding of the way the legislature wishes to proceed is to ask the institutions to hew closer to what their stated goals are in the founding of the institution from our original documents that founded the different institutions, because we do ask different things of different ones of our higher education institutes, entities here in the state, say we want you to hew to that goal. And my understanding is that the structure will be to say, this is the amount of money will be cut unless that you find a way really to meet those goals, in the hopes that if those things are steered closer to meeting the goals that were the stated reason for having the institution be here in our communities, that then that cut wouldn't take place. So the devil will be in the details, of course, to work that all out. But there are a lot of areas where there's waste. There's a lot of areas of duplication. There's a lot of areas, I think, where programs have been put in place that might not make sense to have that program at every single institution in the state, but where we do still want it in the state, but maybe just not at every institution in the state. I do think that there is room for improvement, and I hope that that will be the result of this this whole process that we'll be going through this session.
We'll talk about budget. It looks like the projections are we'll have less money coming in than last year. And obviously at any given session, the pie isn't unlimited, right? So what would be your priorities? Where would you see the
so
money spent?
I don't have any new shiny programs that I want at all. I feel like we actually already for several years in a row have had too many shiny new programs, and each new program one at a time, when you look at it, has these beautiful objectives and things from it. But in my view, that has come at the expense of not funding some of our run-of-the-mill bread and butter programs, like child protective services, making sure that they have caseworkers that have experience, like services for people with disability. We've got people on the waiting list for those services that have been there 20 years, and we've gone through periods where we couldn't even keep the programs open because we weren't paying enough for the individuals who were there providing the services. We have our Baby Watch program. These are children that are born with physical limitations that they're not going to be able to learn to walk or talk unless they get skilled interventions. And right now that program has basically been cut in half just because of not getting cost of living increases over many years. And it loses its ability to retain staff and provide the services. And that's not easy to track, right? No one's ever going to be able to come and say, oh, hey, your kid's in sixth grade now, and they're only two grades behind. They would have been up at grade level if you would have helped them learn how to speak when they were 6 months old, but you didn't because you didn't have anyone there. So now they're two grades behind. We'll never be able to track that. But I do believe those kids that are born with those problems, those disabilities, will do better if we give them the healthcare that they need, and that we'll all do better if we give them the healthcare that we need. So that's just one example of a program that, to me, I wish we would just get funding to keep it working how it's supposed to work.
What are some of the issues you're interested in? Any piece of legislation you're going to run?
Yeah, so I think housing affordability is a very difficult issue in the state right now. Housing has gotten more expensive across the whole nation, and in Utah has gotten worse faster than other states on average. Many of us who are hoping that our children and grandchildren will still live close by us are going to wind up being disappointed. They'll just have to move away and won't be able to move back because it's so expensive. And to me, we've done a whole lot of things that I don't think are going to help very much. I think we just need to make it easier to build smaller homes. We need to make it easier to build on smaller lots. But then we won't have to subsidize anybody. We won't have to take somebody's tax money and give it to somebody else as a subsidy. If you just allow a home to be built that's smaller and not as costly in the first place, then it will be less expensive in the first place. But right now, there are dozens and dozens and dozens and hundreds of different barriers. They're all different all around the state about what the rules are. But there's almost no place in the whole state where building small homes on small lots is just allowed as a permitted use. Right now, when that gets permitted, it's only in a small development at a time, and it's only in exchange for the developer giving up other costly things somewhere else. So then we force them to pay more somewhere else over here to make a park and make trails and make the roads wider over here. Then we allow them to build one little area where there's smaller homes there. But in the end, that all those things drive up the cost instead of just allowing the average cost to come down because we make it easier.
I was reading a report recently. You probably read the same report saying that right now, and even if we increase to the goal that the governor set, we'd only be just keeping up with growth and not getting ahead of the problem.
Yeah. I mean, on the one hand, I'm glad the governor set a goal. On the other hand, it's really kind of irrelevant. All of us could sit down and write a goal on a piece of paper. We could fold it up and put it in our pocket and do I don't know what with it. It doesn't matter if you set a goal. What matters is if we change policy in a way that actually makes it easier for smaller homes to be built and less costly for smaller homes to be built. Then the goal will be less important. If it's easier to build smaller ones, if it's easier to build less expensive ones, if enough homes can come into being to just without a policy, will just tip supply and demand. Supply and demand still works. If there's enough to go around, that won't be quite as terribly expensive. And if there's a little too many, the cost will come down a little bit more. But we've just really constrained supply, and that has driven up the price a lot.
Are you hopeful or pessimistic about this? It seems like there's a lot of that. I know a lot of people who just can't get into homes.
No one can get into a home unless they have an immensely high paying job with or two incomes, or they've got parents or grandparents who are somehow are spotting them, you know, the amount of money to get in. It's just really impossible. But I mean, this comes because of policy changes that we have. We can do those policies different. Other places around the country, Texas has much different ways that they allow to be built, and their homes are just a lot cheaper compared to their incomes there. So we could change our policies. We just need to get to work and be serious about changing the policies so that it is easier. And even then, it still will be slow, but it doesn't have to always stay this bad.
I want to talk about a related topic, homelessness. I think the current plan is to build a kind of a large central campus. A lot of services there. Of course, that's going to be pretty expensive and an ongoing expense as well.
You can think of the cost of housing as just like water pressure pushing people out of their homes. If homes are very, very expensive, then a landlord who is renting to someone will know that they could be making $500 a month more. Whereas if they were only could make $100 a month more, they might let that person just stay there. As long as it stays expensive, that will just push people into homelessness. So we do need to try and figure out how to get services to homeless people. But if we don't do something to bring down the average cost of housing, we're really just walking around in circles. It will get worse and worse if housing costs stay very, very high.
What do you think we should do this session about the Great Salt Lake? There's been a lot of action the last couple of sessions. We had a report in 2023 which said one of the possibilities was the lake could dry up in 5 years, and we had two huge snow years, right? But the latest report I read, we're back to 2021 levels. What should be done at the legislative level?
So some of the biggest projects, all of the biggest projects that we've done over the last 3 or 4 years weren't projects that just magically happened from a vote and then the project was done. They were spending of money on things to try and save water in the hopes that we would have more available for the lake. And those are in the process of being carried out. Some of the agricultural optimization to make it so that agriculture is more efficient with their water. And then here along the Wasatch Front, it's secondary water meters. Right now, we don't charge people anything when they use a lot of water. We don't charge them any extra if the pipe's broken and their water's gushing out in their street, because we don't know how much they're using. So no one knows how much they're using. When those programs are in place, hopefully it'll save enough to make a difference. When we have secondary meters in place, we could finally, for the first time ever, actually charge people for how much they use. Everybody says, well, I have a water right. Yes, you do. But that doesn't mean you have five times that much water right. But right now, we have no way to track it. So hopefully those things will continue to help. Will continue to move us in the right direction, but hopefully also we'll get a little more snow.
Yeah, we need that as well, don't we? Anything else you'd like to say going into the session here?
Nothing's gone wrong yet.
It's
a blank sheet. Hopefully a bunch of good things will happen.
So far, so good. I always like to ask legislators, people are wondering, well, how do I influence my legislator? How do I get to them and let them know what I want? What would you say?
Well, I think there's two answers to that. One is you have to do a little bit of work to meet your own local representative and your local senator. You can send some emails to them. You can go in person when they have a town hall. You probably will have to go out of your way a little bit to meet them so they know who you are. Then at least they'll know who it is when you send them an email. And secondly, you just need to decide what issues you care about. And once you've decided that, then probably the best thing is to find an interest group who matches your interest and join up with that group. So the group can help you know when a bill is coming up that you care about. If you're just out on your own, you won't know which 20 of the 1,000 bills that are released is the issue that you care about. You won't have a way to know when it's coming up in committee. But if you join up with a group of like-minded folks who will let you know when that bill's coming up, then you might have a chance to email the committee members or come down to a rally, or maybe your representative is right on that committee. And if you know it's there, then if you, especially if you've met them, then you could send something in and say, hey, I really care about this and I know about it. So here's my email or here's my phone message about it.
Well, we've been talking with Representative Raymond Ward, Republican from Bountiful. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
We'll go to a break here, and when we come back, we'll have additional legislators, and we'll talk to some members of advocacy groups as well. We're broadcasting live from the state capitol. We're in the East Senate building, the Seagull Room, and we'll have more following this break. Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams, and we're broadcasting, as is our wont to do, from the Capitol, state capitol. It's the opening day of the 2025 Utah legislature. We're broadcasting live from the Siegel Room in the East Senate building on the Utah Capitol complex. Earlier in the program, we talked with Senate President Stuart Adams. We also had a conversation just before the break with Representative Raymond Ward, Republican from Bountiful. Hopefully, we're going to connect here in the broadcast with House Minority Leader Angela Romero and House Minority Whip Jennifer Daly Provo. But right now, we're going to go to a conversation I recorded a couple of days ago with the Utah Taxpayers Association President Billy Hesterman, looking at priorities that they're looking at for the legislature. We're talking to various groups, seeing what they're looking forward to in the upcoming session of the 2025 Utah legislature. And we're talking right now with Billy Hesterman, President of the Utah Taxpayers Association. Mr. Hesterman, thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So what's on the watch list for the Utah Taxpayers Association? What are there potential bills or some things that you want to get accomplished?
Well, we already know that we're likely looking for a tax cut this year, which is always good news for taxpayers. In December, the Executive Appropriations Committee of the legislature, which is essentially the head budget committee, set aside $165 million to do a tax cut. So we're now waiting to see what that means, whether it means it could be an income tax rate reduction for everyone in the state, or they may follow through with the governor's proposal of eliminating the tax on Social Security for seniors, or maybe a mix of both. It might be a little, kind of a piecemeal some things together and see what they can do at the end. But that's the main thing we're watching right now is to see what they do with that money they set aside to give some relief to everyone in the state.
How are things looking with, with revenue, tax revenue? Is it looking like there is money that could be used for a tax cut?
That's what our fingers are crossed for. We know that they have, again, set aside that money that they've already collected, but we do know that revenue in the state is looking a little flat at the moment. And so we're hoping that everyone, it did some good Christmas shopping, maybe did an addition or a remodel or something on their home as well, doing some things to increase the revenue for the state from the tax side so that there is money for the legislature to, follow through with the tax promises they made and also be able to, make sure that the government keeps providing the services that we all enjoy in the state. So a little bit down, we know they've directed their budget committees to not look to spend money this year, but look to save money. But hopefully that still includes a tax cut for everyone.
Tell me a little bit more about Governor Cox's proposal to remove the state tax on Social Security payments.
Sure. The last few years, the legislature has made the decision to increase the amount of exemption that we give to Social Security for income. So we are now at a point where if you have $75,000 in income and you receive Social Security, that Social Security would fall under that first $75,000. And Governor Cox has proposed that we fully eliminate the exemption all the way and make it so that no Social Security in the state is taxed. So any of our seniors that are receiving that would receive a great benefit. They estimate at the State Tax Commission that could be nearly $1,000 a year for a household that receives Social Security. And so that would be a significant tax break for our seniors in the state and probably really some needed relief for a lot of families.
You mentioned several possibilities in terms of tax cuts. Does the Taxpayers Association favor anyone over the other? Or you just want some tax cuts?
Well, if you're talking about what is the true, pure, fair tax reduction to do, it would be to just simply lower the income tax rate overall so that everyone in the state has a benefit. We're currently sitting at 4.55%. You could tick it down to 4.45 with that money that they've set aside for a tax cut, and that would be the true form of, broaden the base and lower the rate. When you take out the tax on Social Security, that is actually shrinking your base a little bit, but does provide an important tax relief to those who maybe are on a fixed income or those who don't have the ability to work as much as others. And so it's we'd welcome either, and both are good proposals. And, we'll see what they can put together by the end of the session. My guess is we'll see some kind of a combo of a little bit of an income tax rate drop and then maybe increasing that exemption for Social Security from $75,000 to $100,000.
So switching gears, playing defense, you might call it. Anything on the horizon that Utah Taxpayers Association wants to head off?
Well, there's always new ideas on how to collect revenue for government. Usually not at the state level, but we hear from our local levels, from the school districts, the counties, the cities, that they always want to find new ways to add additional money to their coffers as well. So there are some proposals that allowing for annual inflationary adjustments to everyone's property taxes instead of having to go through truth in taxation, which is the meeting notice that comes whenever a city or county or school district wants to raise your taxes. So some things like that we want to be careful to analyze and be cautious about. We know that there's some entities looking for the ability to increase their salary for part-time staff and those things, and we want to make sure that that's fair, but done in a way that's prudent to the taxpayer and efficient for them.
Anything else you'd like to say about the upcoming legislative session?
I think the key is involvement. Anyone who wants to be involved should be involved. You shouldn't be afraid of coming up to the state capitol or even just participating online. The legislature has done a great job to allow those who can't come to the Capitol still participate in the meetings. You can watch them online on their website. You can also make public comment through the website during the meetings. And really, those voices are heard. They're not just dismissed. So make sure that if you're interested and you care, you get involved. And really also reach out to your local legislators and talk to them and get to know them and share your insight with them. That's how real things get done in our state, or those who show up make things happen. So take the opportunity to show up.
We've been talking with Billy Hesterman, president of the Utah Taxpayers Association. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Hey, thank you.
You're listening to Access Utah, Utah Public Radio. Today is the opening day of the 2025 Utah Legislature. And as we usually do, we're broadcasting from the state capitol complex, this time from the East Senate building. And right now, we're bringing in House Minority Leader Angela Romero. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We also have with us House Minority Whip Jennifer Daly Provo. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Appreciate you being here. So far we've been talking to Republicans. Good to get the Democrats' point of view here. So I want to just ask open-ended, first of all, So Leader Romero, what are top priorities for you and for the Democrats in the House?
I think top priorities for Democrats in the House is housing availability. We definitely have a housing crisis. Also working with Salt Lake City on addressing homelessness and how do we help our unsheltered population, and work with the state, but also work with the city to truly address the needs. Those are big concerns. Voting rights are a big concern for us as well when it comes to vote by mail, and also just energy. Energy is huge for us, and how are we going to provide that infrastructure for energy, and how are we going to build as a whole, as a state, when it comes to our population growth, and how are we going to be able to maintain the energy needed to make sure that we don't have blackouts, and how do we invest that properly? And part of that is looking at our transmission lines, and it's a conversation that a lot of times we don't have.
Ask the same question to you, Representative Vidalia Provo, and then I'll do some follow-up. So top priorities.
So I think Representative Romero covered the, you know, the top line issues that our caucus has coalesced around and cares very deeply about on behalf of our constituents and the people that we have the privilege of representing. But to get a little more in the weeds, you know, we're, as far as bills are concerned, I know that many of our caucus members are trying to stay really focused on making sure there are healthcare services available for all people, especially, as Representative Romero mentioned, our homeless population. Better access to mental health care, better interventions when people in mental health crisis are experiencing interactions with public safety. Taking a look at some of the nuances of our election systems and where we can bolster an already pretty great program, recognizing that there, you know, that there are those that believe that our election system is not adequate, and doing our best to provide reassurance that the protections are there and that the minor failures, there's a system that addresses when there are disparities in voting. And so, you know, we want to make sure that we're not creating problems that aren't there through legislation and having honest conversations about how we can ensure that people have access to health care, robust voting rights, environmental protections. I think that we have an obligation as a caucus to recenter conversation about our water crisis, because we have lost focus on that, I think, a little bit in the last year or so. And recognizing, along with the conversation about energy, how that and our, you know, our water shortage and climate change go hand in hand. And so we have to have those complex, nuanced conversations and not get bogged down in political talking points that get a lot of clicks on social media.
Representative Romero, I'd like to follow up on energy. The governor is proposing, as part of his energy proposal, nuclear energy. Are you supportive of that?
I personally am not. And we're also, if we're going to look at the infrastructure for that, it's 10 years away and millions and millions and millions of dollars. And we've seen it fail in other states. And so I have some concerns when we have some natural resources here in renewables, when it comes to solar and it comes to battery storage and geothermal. So there are other options outside of nuclear. I'm not saying that isn't a good, well, I'm not saying it's not a preferred energy resource for me. And I know there are a lot of people that have concerns with it.
Representative Vidalia Provo, follow up on water. There's been a lot of attention to Great Salt Lake. Anything we should do there, and then broader?
So we, over the last several year legislative sessions, have invested a lot of money, hundreds of millions, up to close to $1 billion, in trying to address a shrinking lake. What I would like to see in the short term is some better understanding of where that money has gone, what kind of improvements have been made, some improved reporting on what's working, what isn't working. We know we invested a lot of money into trying to purchase water rights, but there hasn't, turns out, my understanding is there haven't been a lot of people really stepping up willing to sell those water rights. And so while the intention was there, it hasn't played out. So what's the next best thing? What can we do? There's been great investment in helping farmers achieve better water efficiency. And that's wonderful. I love hearing stories that we can be supportive in that way, because we have a very strong agricultural economy and community in the state. But how much has it helped? And is that something that we should double down on to do more of? So I think some more follow-up conversations to figure out what's working, because the problem is not solved. We had a great snow year last year, and even better snow year the year before. This year, it's not so great, and we can't just continue to hope that the next big snow will come. And that we have a lot of issues to address, there's no question, but we can't lose focus on something as critical as water and the health and economic impact that comes with a shrinking lake, the negative impact. because there are other complicated issues that we have to discuss.
No, we have to get you to the opening of the session. Representative Vermeer, I definitely wanted to get your comments on immigration. We have a new president. He's going to fulfill his campaign promise to do deportations. I know you have some concerns on what some of the proposals are, it looks like, coming forward in the legislature.
Yeah, I just have concerns with just the whole conversation about immigration. And I want to remind people that majority of people that live in Utah have a history of immigration in their family. There's very few people outside of our indigenous populations that cannot say they don't have an immigration story. And so we have to be very careful here in Utah how we talk about immigration. We have to be very careful that we're not demonizing a whole community. And we have to make sure that we are not associating crime to immigration. So we as a state can really not do that much when it comes to addressing immigration. That's really a federal issue, and Congress really needs to get off of their hands and do something about it and quit finger pointing. There was a compromise bill, a bill I didn't really like at the congressional level. The president-elect then, who is now our president, killed that bill. And so do we have a border crisis? Is there concerns with the border? Yes, but we have to make sure that when we're talking about immigration, we're not just talking about the border. We have longtime residents here in Utah who have been seeking to be citizens or at least have a legal work permit. And there's a process going. And so I just want people to know that when they're looking at immigration and when they're talking about immigration, we're talking about people. And we're talking about majority of the people who are here to look for a better opportunity for them and their families. And many of these individuals we're talking about grew up as their kids grew up with your kids. And so I want to make sure that we put a human face on it and not just associate immigration to public safety. And when we talk about the fentanyl crisis, we had an opioid crisis here in the United States. We've had it for a long time. And when you look at who's getting picked up for fentanyl, it's U.S. citizens. So I think we have to be very, very, very concerned about how we talk about immigration and how we treat people. Because we saw in the 1920s and we saw people that were U.S. citizens getting swept up and deported to a country that was not theirs. And so we have to be very careful on how we talk about immigration.
We'll need to leave it there. I need to get you to the session, which starts at 10 o'clock. We appreciate you very much, House Minority Leader Angela Ribeiro and House Minority Whip Jennifer Daly Provost. Thank you for coming in. Appreciate it. And thanks to everyone who joined us on the broadcast. And we've been broadcasting from the State Capitol Complex. It's the opening day of the 2025 Utah Legislature. And we've been broadcasting from the East Senate building on the Utah Capitol Complex. Our guests have included Senate President Stuart Adams, as we said, House Minority Leader Angela Romero, House Minority Whip Jennifer Daly Provost. And we also heard from Representative Raymond Ward, Republican from Bountiful, and from Utah Taxpayers Association President Billy Hesterman. We have an interview we'll hear at another time with Jason Chipman from Libertas Institute. But we have loved coming to you from the Capitol. We'll continue these conversations going throughout the session. Tune in to Access Utah. And thanks, everyone. Special thanks to my engineer, Nick Porath, and to Shalane Smith Needham and Katie Swain for their help back at the studio. Thanks, everyone, for listening to Access Utah today.